Go Vertical podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. It's been a long time since I did a podcast. I don't know why. Every time I kind of start, I just seem to, my brain goes blank. I did quite a long podcast where I was talking. Someone asked me about I think it was advice about a career, like how, you know, like having a career or something, and about what to do if you're unemployed on the dole and stuff. So I started doing that, and I was like pushing the pram through the rain. So it was a while ago. It was in the winter time, and then I think Noah started crying, so I turned it off, and then I never went back to it. So I do apologize. So yeah, I don't know I can't remember what the last podcast was about. I guess I'll keep this one fairly short. I think one reason I don't do it as much is that there's always someone with a bloody, some kind of noisy machinery or noisy like weed cutter type thing outside our house somewhere. There's always like a that kind of noise, which is like really annoying. Unless I'm doing it, then it doesn't bother me. So what can we talk about? I very rarely go on forums. I try and avoid it. I used to love going on, you know, I used to love going on forums. Super Topper was a great kind of forum. In the days when the internet wasn't shit, basically. I think I've already talked about this before. I think the early days of the internet was like really, really amazing. I remember it was probably like 1995, maybe. I went round to my brother-in-law's house. He was kind of, he's very like tech savvy, and he was like, "Look at this, this is the internet." And he switched on his computer, and we waited like 5 minutes for it to like boot up or something, and it started. Then he like typed in some stuff, and then there was this like black screen with you know, writing appearing on it. Like it must have been text. You could read it, but it was it didn't really rock my boat, really. I don't think I'd ever really use a computer either. So the whole thing, like, unless you were switching it on and playing a game, I couldn't really see the point of what a computer was for. And then later on, a friend of mine, he said, "Oh, this is where you go if you want to look at pornography." Which I thought, oh, that sounds like I need to get myself a computer. So I did actually buy a computer. This was before the pornography. I bought like a second-hand computer. Actually, someone gave me a computer once, but it was like, I don't really know what to do with it. So it was like Windows 3.7 or something. But yeah, anyway, but I bought a computer, and you couldn't go on the internet with it. So it was kind of rubbish. It was rubbish for like looking at pornography. All you could see was yourself wanking in the reflection. So, not that it did, because it was kind of pointless. So I apologise if there's any young people listening to this. I don't know what I'm talking about. So I think I can't think when the big breakthrough in. I went to America right in the middle of the dot-com boom. So when would that be? 1998 or something, 1997. And everyone was like, it was all about the internet and everything else. It was like all really exciting. And I think that's when I decided it was probably something to get into. So I started going on, you know, the internet. And it was like really, it was really interesting in the early days. It just seemed pretty, because I think it's very hard to explain. Like in the past, if you wanted to say you saw a film on TV, saw a film like, is it One Man and His Dog or something? You see this film late at night on BBC Two or something about this guy with a telepathic dog in a post-nuclear kind of wasteland kind of thing, who is supposed to inseminate all these women in this nuclear bunker to save the planet, something, you know, save the human race. And you see this, and if you want to know anything about it, you basically have to go to a library and just hope there's some book about science fiction films from the 1970s or 1980s or something, and and maybe there'll be like a paragraph about it or something. But you know, you met someone else who'd actually seen the same film on the same thing. You know, there wasn't really, yeah, I guess like videos existed, so maybe you could try and get hold of you go to like some mail order. You know, you'd have to try and get someone to order you the DVD, the video to watch, because it was DVDs then. Or you go to some sort of record shop that sold DVDs and somehow try and get hold of it. I think I got like a few kind of obscure DVDs like that. But anyway, but then the internet came along, and you had all these people who were like interested in One Man and His Dog. It's not even called that, so it's something and a dog. And suddenly there'd be like, it'd be like forums where people were like, oh, blah blah blah, and then someone would create like a website all about like the Time Bandits or something. And there was a really good website. It was, I think it's still there somewhere. It was all about that film Caligula, which is, if anybody doesn't know, it was filmed by, it was like financed by Bob Guccione, or whatever his name is, the sort of the guy who owned loads of pornographic magazines. And it had all these like celebrities in it, like famous people like Malcolm McDowell and Peter O'Toole and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, they were making this film about Caligula, but on the evening, like somebody else was coming in and he was like filming all this like hardcore pornography. And then like they inserted all this pornography into the film. And so it's kind of a crazy time for films, I guess. Anyway, so the whole website all about that, like interviewing people and stuff like that. So it was, anyways, I remember thinking it was like, really, if you got that kind of brain that was really always like interested in loads of stuff, then I the internet was like amazing. You could just find out so much, stuff. And in climbing, like if the first time when we went to Patagonia, the only thing we could find about what we were going to do was in a New Zealand climbing magazine. Maybe it was an Australian climbing magazine. So you had to physically get a hold of this climbing magazine and then read the article. So that was, so that's my email coming in. That would be it, really. So yeah, suddenly with the internet, kind of explosion of the internet, all the information was there for about, everything. And it just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, there'd be like websites about sort of big wall climbing, and people would be writing posts about doing a route. So through that, you could like glean some information. But as it kind of expanded, you could get like literally every single climb on the planet is like now sort of recorded, and you can find out every single move on it, which is a shame, really, because it was kind of cool. It was like when we first time went to Patagonia, we literally had Alan Keane's his book, and in the back there's like a diagram of the mountain range. Like, we couldn't find any maps of the area, I think, because it was maybe the Argentinians didn't want good quality maps because it was on the border with Chile. But you literally had like a stick line drawing of like, this is one ridge, this is one ridge. To get here, you have to go over this ridge. And it was very, very simple, where now you just have like Google Earth. You could just see every single bush, basically. So that's progress, I guess. But anyway, so forums, I used to like going on forums. But I think as the acidity of online life is like killed off all the large animals, and it's just all that's left is all the bacteria. So I tend to avoid it. But I saw this article on UK climbing. I went off social media several months ago. Maybe that coincided with me not doing any podcasts, but I went off social media, so now I'm like totally through the shivers and the all that kind of stuff, like sweating and grabbing hold of other people's phones and trying to trying to like set up like an account or something. I decided to invest my time, although I have a website, I invested my time in Substack because I'm a big fan of Glenn Greenwald. So Glenn Greenwald's on there, so that I better do it as well. So Substack, it's like andykirkpatrick.substack or something. And basically, you go there and just post articles on there, like maybe once or twice a week, and then they eventually appear on my website. And it's a way of people like supporting your writing, if you like what you do, so you can pay like $1 a week or something if you think it's worth it. And at the moment, I think everything's basically free anyway, so a lot of people are just go and read it. So let's have a look at that. What was my point? Social media. I've kind of been avoiding any kind of social media, but that means you end up going back on your, like, you have this kind of screensaver in your brain, don't you, when you're there's nothing else to do. You're not supposed to be looking at pornography, so you just look at the, like, I always look at the, every morning, like, my wife's got a phone, like, I don't own a phone, so I've got a phone, but it's like a dumb phone. I need it to do your stupid banking stuff, or if you buy something, it has to text you and all that kind of stuff. So I got a phone for that. So I always like grab her phone. Like, I know it's terrible, but it's just like having a little sniff of the whiskey bottle top or something. And I always look at the BBC website and I regret it. And then I look at the Fox website and then I regret it. And neither of them make me happy, but it's almost like having a, It's like two people having a massive fight, and you're like, come over here, like, tell me what the problem is. And they tell you, and you go, just wait there, and you go see the other person. What's the problem? Oh, yeah, yeah. And they go, like, you're both fucking idiots. Basically, it's a bit, little bit like that, really. It's like a balanced view of the world. It's like an imbalanced view of the world, basically, from two perspectives. So, so what's my point called? Like, yeah, but one of these websites is UK Climbing, for some reason. I don't know why. It's just that thing. You just go, like, go to UK Climbing, and it's, like, nothing's ever happening. It's always about the fucking boring Olympics and all that kind of stuff. And did anybody watch the Olympics with the climbing? I didn't watch it, so I just find it really. I don't know. I mean, it's not meant for me. It's like advertising, and it's not meant for me. So that's why. But yeah. Anyway, so I went to UK Climbing, and there was an article about anxiety, and it was like some woman talking about anxiety in climbing, and I thought that was kind of interesting. So it's kind of rare I actually ever find anything that interesting on there. I think I might be falling out of love with climbing in a way, maybe. We've been trying to go climbing with this child of mine. It's like baby, and every time we go, it's always so frustrating, and you just come away like basically having a shit day and feeling shit at climbing. And basically, it's like, why have I been doing this all for, like, you know, like 45 years? Like, basically, climbing makes me feel shit the whole time. It's a bit like getting into acting or something, you know, to feel like I'm wanted. It's just so frustrating. And, you know, you to kind of get up a piece of, like, the climbing here is, it's over on the Burren, which is like very sort of hard sort of limestone kind of sea cliff climbing. So everything, even like I was doing a route and I was like, oh, is this like an E1? And they were like, no, this is like a hard Sevilla. And I was like, what the fuck? It's like, feels like E1. It's got no gear on it. It's just like, just mental, really. Like, a lot of routes in Ireland are graded for someone who's done them like 1,000 times, basically. Like, oh, that's easy. There's like a, you know, there's a hole there around the corner, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, so yeah, I was thinking, like, oh, I'm just over climbing. It's just like, we bought like a secondhand boat, a boat. But anyway, boat. And so there's not far from us is like the biggest lake in Ireland, which is like loads of people go there from all over Europe. Like, you get Swiss people and German people and Austrian people, and Swiss German people and Swiss French people. So Belgians. And so we've been going there, and God, that's so much more fun. You just rock up with your boat. Although you have to work out to get the boat into the water, which is kind of tricky. If you're ever like reversing a trailer into the water, that's kind of, and you've got to try and look like you know what you're doing, which is tricky. So you know, go on this massive lake with this boat, and it's just like, God, it's so easy. It's like not like going climbing. You just sit in a fucking boat. You know, you got to get the engine working and all that kind of stuff. But it's just, God, it's just so much nicer, and you can just throw all your shit in the boat. Like, not literally, but you've got like, well, you have literally got shit in the box. You got like a baby in there that's probably got shit in his pants. But you've got, you know, you can take all your stuff, and we head off to this island, and we go on the island, and it's got like it's really nice. This is like the one day of the year where it's not fucking pissing with rain here. And you'd go for a swim, and all, but the baby goes to sleep on the beach, and Vanessa goes for a run around the island. It's just like so much better than going climbing. So basically, you know, climbing's like, it's just for selfish people, I reckon. It's all about you, and like, I'm not climbing well today, and I should have stretched. And it's like, no, you should have fucking done something else. You should have just gone in a boat instead. So I did have a mini climbing adventure where I was sitting in the coffee shop. Ignore this if you heard the story already. I was sitting in the coffee shop, and some guy turned up, and he was like, "Oh, you're Andy Kirkpatrick?" And I'm like, "I used to be." And he was like, "I saw you in this film, Psycho Vertical, on a plane somewhere." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." And I said, "Are you a climber?" And he said, "Oh, I've been like top roping over on the Burren." So I was like, "Oh, he must be a climber." So I was, for some reason, I had like a little, I was just like, I must have been really desperate to do something. So I was like, "Do you want to go climbing sometimes? I've got this, there's this route called, what's it called? death by grass or something. What's it called? It's called Seventh Heaven. It's called, not a good, it doesn't live up to the name. And I was like, "Do you want to go do this route, Seventh Heaven?" It's like this kind of mysterious route that's upon the Connemara in the mountains there. So it's like, "Oh yeah, that sounds cool." Anyway, so we set up this date to meet up. So we met up at the car park in the Connemara Mountains. Great, really amazing mountains, not far from our house. And like proper mountains. Like I always thought the mountains in Ireland would be like big bogs, you know, like bogs with like a church on top or something. But they literally are like some proper mountains here, like really good mountains. It's better than, as good as you get in Wales or the lakes or something, not Scotland, but of course. So we turn up there, and his name was Pat, which is a problem, because when I was climbing with him, I kept thinking like, is his name actually Pat, or am I thinking he's called Pat because he's Irish? You know, it's like, do you know when you go climbing with, like, yeah, I used to have a relation of mine who was black, and he was called Leroy. And I always used to get like really, really like paranoid that his name wasn't Leroy, but it was Leroy, so it was okay. So anyway, so Pat, so we get, I said, "Oh, show me what gear you've got." So he had a harness, and on his harness, he had a belay device and a pulley. And I thought, that's a bit weird. Why has he got a pulley? And he said, "Oh, I've got two belay devices." So I should have realized that, because he thought a pulley was a belay device. That was like a warning sign. Anyway, so I don't pay attention to stuff like that. So we packed our bags, and we went up, and you have to walk up quite a long way. And there's this route called Carrot Ridge. There's no carrots on it, but it's like, I think it might be the longest, supposed to be the longest climb in Ireland. Which is, it's 1,000 feet high or something. It's like a big quartz rib coming down. It's not very difficult. It's probably V-diff or something. And some people say we could just walk up it, but it's actually, because it's like quartz, like, is it quartz anyway? It's that white rock that's like very slippy. There's not a lot of gear on it, but it's not actually very difficult. But it's amazing. It's a lovely place to go climbing, because you can get up onto the horseshoe up there. It's like a big horseshoe that's really kind of quite hard work. Big walk up there. So we go up there. We got to the bottom of this route, and I'd heard that this route was really sparsely protected, if at all, and the belays weren't very good. So I really should have put some pegs or something, but I didn't. So we started climbing, and I did the first pitch, and I just did like a 60 meter pitch, and I think there was like maybe like one piece of gear in 60 meters, but the climbing wasn't very difficult, but it was again this kind of like quartzy kind of rock. So as long as nothing snapped off, you weren't really going to fall off. But there was a lot of like grass and stuff, so you're kind of like meandering around all this grass and tufts of grass. So then I get to the first bee layer, and it was actually there was an old sling around a big kind of flake, but you could see the flake was not really attached to anything, which was kind of sitting on the thing. So if you pulled it from the top, it would probably fall off. And I think there might have been a peg, but the peg was like really crap as well. It was like a rusty peg. And somehow I managed to make some sort of bee layout of that. Anyway, so I brought Pat up, and then Pat got to the one piece of gear, which was a cam, and he was like trying to pull it out just by pulling it out with his hand. And I'm like, no, Pat, you have to do it like this. And he was like really, really fiddling, trying to get it out. And I was having to explain, it's like a syringe. You have to like put your finger at the top and you have to pull back. Is that a syringe? Yeah. So so I thought that's another bad sign that he didn't know how to get the cam out. So I thought, it doesn't matter. So he came up. In retrospect, I realised he didn't know how to belay either, but it didn't really matter on that route. So the route kind of carries on up, and it was luckily it was kind of dry, but there was one pitch where it was very, very like just like bushwhacking up this like steep corner with loads of, well, it looked like grass, but it was actually just like kind of like sponge. So it wasn't like grass. Grass can actually be quite good. You can remember climbing New Zealand, you get really good at knowing what grass you can pull on and what grass isn't, you know, what plants are good to pull on. But yeah, it was kind of like you just put your hands in it and it would just kind of sink down into you, up to your elbows. And so that was kind of scary. And every now and again, you'd like dig into the mud and hopefully try and find some kind of crack or something. And I think I might have found one piece of gear, but none of the gear was very good. And then it got, anyway, so anyway, just like that, it was like shit climbing, no gear, shit belay, then another shit climbing. And it just kind of went on like that. But Pat seemed to be enjoying himself, so that was good. And then we there's a bit where you have to traverse around to the other side of this. You're climbing like a big pillar type thing. Climbing around to the side of this pillar, and there was like a big, loose, like small TV-sized block, just sitting on the pitch, where if you just pull on it, you could pull it off. So when Pat was coming up, because he was like traversing around, and as it traversed around, you really got a sense of exposure, like hanging down. Like, I'm not scared of heights, but I can really appreciate how other people would be scared of heights if they would never really been climbing before. So as Pat came round, I was like, Pat, like don't touch that block, but when you get above it, I want you to kick it off. So like Pat was like hanging on, and he looked kind of, you know, like freaking out. He looked a bit scared. And then I said, just kick the block. And he kicked the block. And there's something about being really, really afraid and then seeing like a block just like flying off and like exploding and crashing down the screes below you. It was, he looked even more afraid then. And then we had this kind of sort of semi-hanging belay. And another crappy belay. I think he would have survived if I'd fallen off, if I'd taken like a 120 meter fall. I think the belay might have held, apart from one, a few of them. Anyway, so we eventually get to this last final belay, and it was amazing, like a spot where you basically end up in this like a rib with grass on one side, and when you got to the top, there was like a most perfect grassy ledge, like with an overhang above it, where you could just, it was the most amazing place to bivvy if you really wanted to bivvy up there. I can imagine a few people have already bivvied up there. And it was kind of getting dark, and luckily we had head torches. So we eventually topped out, and it was, I think it was probably like 8 o'clock in the evening. So it'd been like a really, really long day. And we kind of headed down, and we both got in separate cars and we drove home, and it was a kind of midnight by the time we got in our cars. And unfortunately on the way home, there'd been like a motorbike person had been killed in a crash. So the road was closed. So you had to do like a detour, which took about an hour because there aren't many, basically driving down the coast, and there's only one road that goes down the coast. And if that's closed, you have to drive all the way back up the coast and go inland anyway. So it was a really great day, but the next day I could literally hardly walk down the stairs because I'd just done so little walking or climbing. Like, I was like really, really, really wrecked. And I did notice, because Pat had actually been like personal trainer, like owned a gym. He'd be like an MMA fighter, and he ended up being quite a well known kind of character where I live. And Pat, we both had this thing about where I've been standing somewhere, and there was like a kettlebell, like a 24-kilo kettlebell, and I just like picked it up and like swung it like 10 times, did like 10 kettlebell swings, and put it back down. And then about an hour later, I just absolutely felt wrecked, like my back and everything else. So I think that was one of the strange things with the old lockdown stuff, is that artificially you kind of, well, a lot of people kept very, very physically fit, but for me, I was just good at, I just basically got fit at pushing a pram around. But yeah, you kind of forget. I think the older you get, I think you have this thing where you can be like just strong. You've always been strong all your life, and you take it for granted. So I remember a friend of mine, they were doing sort of weightlifting. They were doing a weightlifting program to do with some sort of performance thing. And the person training them had them on these like ridiculously light weights. And now just like, that's like so stupid. Like you just go in there and start lifting really, really heavy weights straight away. But you kind of take it for granted how strong you are, I think. And it's only when you allow your strength to lapse. Like this is the first time in my life, I think, I ever let my strength lapse quite a long way. Like I went through this period when Noah was born, where I think I got so fat. I think I was like 108 kilos or something, whatever that is. So it was like pretty fucking fat. Like I couldn't. Like my son came over, and he like tapped my stomach, and he was like, "When's the next one due?" or something. And he's like, "Oh God, when your kids start making out you're fat, you better do something about it." So, and I've got this like Montane waterproof jacket, and I always know when I can't zip it up that it's very well. That it's, I'm getting too fat. But I just call it, it's like a fallow period. I think it's quite good to get fat and thin. I think it's like a natural, it's like the winter time. There's nothing wrong with being fat. So I end up doing a diet where I cut out most of the carbs and stuff. Probably cut out all the carbs. And I was like fasting. So I was just like eating like once a day or once and a bit a day. And I lost like loads of weight. I lost like 13 kilos. Is that a thing? Yeah, 13 kilos, which is like a fucking huge amount of weight. But basically what I did, I lost fat, but I also like lost a lot of muscle. So suddenly my legs were like really skinny for the first time ever since I was a kid, probably. And Vanessa was like, "What the fuck have you done to your legs?" So then I've had to like now try and restore my strength through things. So, but it was an interesting experiment to see, you know, like to get really, really, you have to, if you're going to lose your fat, you're going to have to do it over a very long period. But if you want to lose all your muscle, you could probably do that quite rapidly. So, back to the forums. Yeah. So even though I think climbing's shit and it just makes me feel shit. Have you ever seen that film? Hamlet 2, one of the best comedy films no one's ever seen, with Steve Coogan. But there's a bit where he's like a drama teacher, and he says, "You know, because I was rejected by my father, I got into acting. So then I was rejected by, you know, basically it's that kind of thing." So climbing's a bit like that. So I was on the UK Climbing, and it was this woman. Talking about anxiety and climbing and blah 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 blah. So I kind of thought, for some reason, it's very rare for me ever to comment on. I think that the only times I've ever commented on UKC in the last probably 5 years is when someone was saying I was like Adolf Hitler, or they weren't going to buy my books because of my politics and all that kind of stuff. So I'd always like I can't help myself. From like church getting involved. I think it's like a working class thing. Like Vanessa's like, "Oh, just don't read it. I just don't respond." I'm like, "Fucking bastard, come out here, let's have a fight outside." But anyway, just thought like, "Oh, that's interesting. I shall add something to this. I should write something about anxiety and stuff like that in this in the comments. You know, very rare for me to do this, but I just thought I'd do it. And so basically, I just wrote something about how you have to be really aware of the language you use, and because basically you can kind of hem yourself in or entrap yourself in the sort of language you use. So an example is I think you should never use like pathologizing words. So you should never use the word depression. You should never use the word stress. You should never use the word like anxiety and all these kind of things. Like you should use, instead of saying like, oh, I'm really depressed at the moment, you should say, I'm really I'm sad, basically. So melancholy is a much better word than depression, because it's you can't get any medication for, you know, go to the doctor, I've got melancholia, can you sort me out? So, but you're trying to have words for things which are more organic and more human and more kind of natural, and not trying to sort of self-pathologize everything you do as being, you know, I've got anxiety, therefore I need to get anti-anxiety medication. And, you know, it's just like it's just kind of like this sort of spiral kind of thing. So you have to be really aware of the language you use, like the language you use about yourself, like how you think about yourself, how you talk about yourself, how you write about yourself, and just be very conscious of what it's really doing. Because I think your subconscious is listening. Like your subconscious, like basically you can't bullshit your subconscious. It really knows what's going on. But at the same time, you know, you could probably fool yourself, you know. So like a lot of people will say, you know, a lot of people will, like the fact this person wrote an article about how anxious they are, that there's going to be on a UK climbing on a forum, shows, you know, maybe they're not anxious, you know, maybe it's like something else. So often you can misidentify something. So instead of saying, you know, so often people, like, they're actually excited, but they're misidentifying that excitement as being anxiety. So like butterflies, you know, the idea of having butterflies in your stomach is a form of like, you know, you want to get on with it. You want to do it. You want to demonstrate you can do it or whatever. Or you know, it's probably like, you know, like if you're like Maximus, what's his name, Biggest Dickus in Gladiator, you know, you're about to go in the forum and you've got your sword out and your spear and all that kind of stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm feeling so anxious. Oh my God, yeah. You know, you could say like, I'm shitting myself. Like the idea of shitting yourself is much better than saying you're anxious, because it's like, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's just, it's not funny if you shit yourself, but it's kind of, you know, it's a more human kind of thing. So often we're misidentifying something. And also there's this idea that you create walls, like barriers in front of you, but really you need to see them as like a hurdle. So, you know, I've said before, my motto in life is that before every great leap comes a hurdle. And often the moment when you're most likely, you want to give up something, you don't want to go on that trip, or you don't want to ask that person out, or you don't want to go for that job interview, or you don't want to, you know, go climbing anymore. That's often the moment just before you get like a huge leap in your life, like something significant is about to happen. And it's like a test. But I also, maybe that test is, you know, you're creating it for yourself. So a lot of the language we use is, it's a little bit like when you get a note from your mum for the PE teacher to say you've got a verruca or something, you can't play football or something. And you often use these words in order to then have an excuse, like, oh, I knew I couldn't do that, like E7, because I'm 108 kilos or something. So, you know, you create these things. So you have to kind of replace them. So it's like, because sometimes I'm really fat, I often say like, oh, I'm like a bumblebee. Like, you know, I shouldn't be able to fly, but I can. And it's kind of, it's a much more, it's kind of funny, but also it puts like a spin on it. And you know, this, the classic one is when you say like, oh, my right arm is really weak. But what you say is, you go like, oh, my right arm is strong, but my left arm is even stronger. So if you, yeah, I'm sure you like, you get what I'm saying here. Like a good example was, I used to have this girlfriend who was doing like really, really horrible like turbo sessions on a bike, and she called it like what's she called it, like you know, like death sessions or something. It was something. So I was like, why do you call it like, you know, like a gold session? Because you want to get a medal at the end of it. And so it's just the way you talk about things. And you can always hear, you can often hear people just talking about themselves like, oh, I'm not very good at this, or I'm weak at this, or I'm shit at this. And I even see it with, especially with kids, I often see parents, my sister, you know, she's got these two amazing kids, but one of them is like really physical and the other one is less physical. But you often say like, oh, she's really sporty, but she's really, she's more creative, you know, she's more timid. And it kind of seeps into the head of the child. So they become more timid because that's what they say they're like. But if you kind of separate them out and you're like, go and jump in that river, and you know, your mum's not here, you know, show me that you're not timid, they'll do it. And it turns out they couldn't swim, but never mind, that's why they were timid. So, but yeah, and I've been on trips with people where you start calling them like hardcore, you know, the person who seems like the least able, you start calling them hardcore, and you start telling them, you can't be delusional about it, like if they're shit, they're shit, but often people just need a bit of wind in their sails, and you know, they'll kind of go along. So I think, but we do live in an age where there's a lot more social credit and cachet from being like a weak, pathetic loser. You know, like even the way people speak, like you know, like they just, you know, like I often talk about like Jocko Willink. Like, oh, look, what I love about Jocko Willink is he's just like so, like, you know, like, you know, I'm so, you know, it's just like this, like, just the way he talks and the way he acts and the way he looks, he's like a manifestation of like not being a weak fucking, you know, a weak person. You know, he just, yeah, some people can't avoid being weak, but they can be strong in other ways. Well, some people just embrace weakness in all its forms, basically. Because it's just like an excuse, which is actually a form of strength, I think, you know, those people. So you need to basically turn all these walls in your mind, like why you can't do stuff, into hurdles, so you can just like, you know, just try and jump over them. Like again, there's like, yeah, you might, you know, you're shitting yourself, you're going to stumble and trip over them, but you know, everyone does, and it's kind of funny as well when you do it. So anyway, so I wrote this, you know, it took me a good 10 minutes to write this thing about language and how to, you know, get over it. And I even said at the end that, you know, like there'll be a lot of grammar errors in this comment, and I could say it's because I'm dyslexic, but really you got to warn it, and it's just because I'm like lazy and don't pay attention. And I posted it. I thought like that was a very positive. Very positive interaction with UKC for a time, and maybe, you know, maybe someone will read it. They might like, yeah, he's usually full of shit, this guy, but I think I can see his point. But unfortunately, it was immediately deleted for being inappropriate, and I have no right, and all my rights of posting on UKC have now been blocked for some reason. So yeah, that's the world we live in. That's why I'm not on social media, because everyone's a fucking weak ass fucker. Anyway, so anyway, it may give me the opportunity to do a podcast. So I'm turning some negative there into positive. I've actually become a life coach, actually. You know, like that guy. You know, it's always the guy, isn't it? Anyway, so I might become a life like dating. Incel. I'm gonna incel ex climbers incel business is is going to be booming. So yeah, so let, so yes, that's probably, I'm probably going to change this podcast to something, you know, something stronger, stronger with Andy Kirkpatrick, something like that. So I guess that's my, that's my, I thought I was going to keep it a bit shorter today. I wasn't, I didn't know what I was going to talk about. So, so at least we found, like, you know, 40 minutes of stuff to talk about. But yes, I will, I am going to try and endeavor to get back into podcasting. I am actually, so I am actually on tour. I'm not just, what's that word? Not felching, simping. I'm not just, this wasn't the reason for doing it. I am actually on tour in the UK in October, so maybe that'd be quite cool when I can do a podcast on while I'm on tour and tell you all the funny things that happen. Probably it'll just get cancelled because of some variant of something. So, but anyway, so if you want to know details, it's on my website. I got a lot of questions sort of piled up for next podcast. So I'll do like a little Q&A podcast. Anybody's got any questions, send them in. Anything, any problems with psychological problems, any health problems, anything at all, gardening, how to mend the impeller on a 5-horsepower Yamaha engine, anything like that. I'm your man. I'm here for you. And thank you for listening. Until next time. Bye.